Delocalized listening began 30 years ago with the first Walkmans, and you have followed this social phenomenon since then. Now there is iPod, which is the revolutionary aspect of these or other similar devices, if there is any.
I suppose, actually, if you think about it, you know, privatized listening predates the Walkman, actually, because in the 1950s, people used to walk around with transistor radios with just one earpiece in. So in a sense, you know, you could listen to the radio well before the Walkman. If you look at the history of the radio anyway, in the 1920s, people often used to wear headphones at home to listen. So there is a kind of interesting history of privatized listening through technology, if you like, that predates the Walkman. I suppose the Walkman becomes a kind of symbol of, I suppose, youth culture to some extent. If you look at the market for Walkmans, was more youth orientated than some of the subsequent technologies, I suppose. If you look at the relationship between something like the Walkman and the iPod, though, I suppose it's kind of quite interesting that you have this progression from a technology that doesn't allow you to change things to one that becomes very malleable, so that if you think of the early Walkmans, you know, all you could do is put a cassette tape in the Walkman and you would have your songs or tunes or whatever, and that was it. Whereas if, in fact, you look at the iPod, you know, you can, the amount of material you can have on it is obviously much, much bigger, but you can also change your playlists as you go. You can, it's a much more kind of a flexible object, if you like. But there are many things about the Walkman that essentially haven't really changed, even with the iPod. So if you look at how people might use them in order to manage their experience, so they're quite similar, I think. So, you know, I also argue that the metaphor of control over your environment, control over your mood, control over your, you know, kind of the aesthetics of the city or wherever it is you're moving, you know, kind of remain the same, for example. You know, so if you look at, I don't know, Walkmans, for example, even teenagers and adults would use them to manage their mood. They would say, well, I don't like silence. I don't like being alone with my thoughts. So using sound to manage that enables them to, you know, kind of keep on track in terms of whether they wanted to be happy or depressed or whatever. You know, they would have music enabling them to do that. But the idea of being with sound or being with the media seemed to be kind of quite prominent, if you like. And that related back to all sorts of things such as, you know, putting on the television as soon as you come in, you know, or having the radio on in the background, so that people increasingly become used to having some kind of media with them. And if you, in fact, you look at iPod uses, it's actually quite similar. The difference being with it is that it's even more successful at enabling users to control their mood, environment, or other people. The reason for that is that essentially, you know, if you look at Walkman users, they might say, well, I often, you know, I can't carry all the music with me to kind of predict what mood I want to be in. So if it's the wrong music, it's better to have no music than the wrong music, yeah? Whereas with an iPod user, they've got, it's not infinite, but in fact it's much, much more flexible. So they can, even on shuffle, you can fast forward it until you find something that fits your mood, or maybe even fits the environment you're walking through, or enables you to control your interaction with others in a way that you like. The other thing with iPod use, maybe the other difference with an iPod is that it enables, you know, people use it in even more environments than before. So a lot of my kind of people I interviewed actually used it at work. Obviously, you need the right kind of job, but they would actually stream music all day as they worked. And they would say, well, they'd never use a Walkman like that because you've got to keep changing tapes or CDs. Whereas with an iPod, they would just stream background music all day, enabling them to work and, you know, not listen to other people. So the iPod seems to allow for even more seamless listening than a Walkman. That's a short answer, yeah?
For your last book entitled Sound Moves, iPod Culture and Urban Experience, you have collected a great number of interviews to iPod listeners. Can you draw in few words a portrait of the typical iPod user?
Well, I think it's changed. From the book, the users were mostly what we call social class 1 and 2. They were aged between the mid-20s to the mid-50s. They often worked in either technology, media, or culture kind of type industries or arts, and they invariably had very large musical collections. So it was a kind of like, you know, the people that take the technology up first are those people that are most technologically sophisticated often, or with more money. If I was to do the same study now, just 2 or 3 years later, I'd expect the age group to be lower. And so it's moved into youth culture more, because actually the parents of these people have bought their children iPods. And also increasingly iPods are given away by banks and other things, you know. So you would expect a sort of slightly lower age profile. But that doesn't mean to say that the people I interviewed, they still represent quite a large number of users. And actually, it always will be the case, the more expensive models will attract actually that type of user, I suppose. You know, and of those users, about half of them came from America, Canada, and the other half, and Australia, and the other half came from Europe. So it's the first global study, as much as it could be, of iPod use, I suppose. But you would expect, you know, with those users, there was a much more kind of a culture of, I think I'd call it opposition, whereby people were using the iPod to control their media schedules and to be, you know, not be got at by what they called, you know, kind of consumerism. It's funny, you know, so that they would all, a lot of users would say, well, we don't like the radio because it plans our listening too much. I don't like the songs they play or whatever it is. And so often they would construct their own equivalents of a radio channel to travel to and to work in the morning. So it may be a mixture of music, they would download radio programs, etc., etc. So part of their ideology was a reclaiming of their own time against the media, even though they were using, you know, the iPod itself is a media object. You know, I wouldn't expect that with younger users so much.
Can you cite some particularly interesting or strange answers to your questionnaire?
Yeah, there were all sorts of things, really. I mean, there's lots of little quotes, which was users saying using their iPod allows them to part the seas like Moses. So the idea is as they walk through the town, everybody would just move away from them. There's other ones like, you know, when I leave the house, I check my pockets for four things: my wallets, my keys, my mobile phone, and my iPod. I never go out without all four on my person. So this, the idea that, you know, people becoming increasingly mobile, or other ones here: my iPod goes everywhere with me. It's like my digital Sherpa for information and entertainment. So Sherpas are people that you normally go to the Himalayas with, and they make sure you don't get lost, and they carry all your food and goods. So it's funny. So the idea of the iPod, this small object, becomes the companion, enables people to move through their day successfully. Or this other one: I store my valuables on the iPod. I completed 3 screenplays, which I data warehouse on my iPod. If the house burns down, I'm not worried because the iPod has the family jewels. So the idea that is, you know, even if the house isn't there, the stuff's in my iPod. But this is my favourite quote. It's the more complicated. It says here, well, I think I've come to the conclusion that overall, I feel pretty out of control in my life. Stores play music to get me to buy more. Work tells me what to do and when. Traffic decides how quickly I get from here to there. Even being in public places forces me to endure other people and their habits. The guy slurping his soup, the brat crying for a piece of candy. I didn't realize how much I yearn for control and probably peace and quiet. Strange, since I'm blasting music in my ears. I think I'm really tired on living on someone else's schedule. The iPod has given me some control back. And so this is quite interesting, because there the idea is the person's looking for both control but peace and quiet. And the way she achieves peace and quiet is by playing music loudly. And so the idea that you construct this, but that music creates a space for her to think.
Which are the preferred places for listening?
I kind of think that almost anywhere is a listening space. The thing about iPods is that, in fact, you construct your environment. If you look at what the French anthropologist used to say, Auger, used to talk about the non-spaces of urban life. And for him, non-spaces were places with no narrative or no inherent meaning, like railway stations, airports, and supermarkets. Whereas with iPod users, anywhere can have no meaning, or everywhere can have the meaning that they give to it. You know, I've interviewed iPod users who will use their iPod in, I don't know, Yellowstone Park in America, and so go through a totally natural environment listening to their music. Or equally, they'll use it at home, you know, but there they'll often stream the music through hi-fi speakers or something like this, or maybe use it so as not to disturb their partner. Using it at work is common for those people with the jobs that enable them to do that. You know, obviously if you interact with the public, you're not going to use your iPod. In America, for example, you know, most users use it in their car. Because Americans in general, unless they live in Chicago or New York, don't walk very many places. So I found out it's quite interesting that, you know, they'd often not be able to answer the questions about using it in the street because they say, well, we never walk anywhere. It's in the car. So it was right at the beginning, they were plugging their iPods into their car radio systems. If you look at Europeans or in England, you know, people will use it on public transport, obviously, in the street. Often, you know, not wishing to take it off to the last minute so they get to work or whatever. So I think the argument is almost anywhere, you know. I got an email, this was a funny one, from an American professor who just had their graduation ceremony for their students. And, you know, with the graduation ceremonies, you know, the staff are on the stage and the students come up. And he said he'd had his iPod on all day. So he was listening to music and the graduation ceremony. I thought that was funny. So anywhere, in a sense, it makes all places, if you're allowed to, you know. Kind
From
of
your studies, have you collected some data on listening preferences other than musical ones? That is, iPod users listen only to music?
Oh, no. To be fair, all users, I listen to music. So that's the most common use. Past that, they would have a good percentage would also have talking books. Others would stream radio programs, now stream blogs and whatever. By the time I finished the study, the video iPod hadn't come out, so... Now you'll find that, you know, iPod users will have, you know, kind of visual content on as well. But the thing about visual content is it's not as mobile as auditory content. So you can't walk down the street watching your iPod. but not if you want to live.
Another device which have a global diffusion is the mobile phone. Mobile phones can serve as music player. In your study, did you find that they are used to this purpose?
Okay, there's a couple of things. Actually, about 25% of iPod users hated their mobile phone. Not the majority, but a good minority hated them. They had them, but they didn't like them. And the reason they didn't like them was that they didn't like to be interrupted. So they would have them, but have them switched off. So they only used them for phoning out. And this was a big difference, I think, that essentially... The iPod is about shutting the world out and living in your own bubble. The mobile phone is about the outside world entering your world. So the iPod is about denying the contingency of the world, and the mobile phone is about the contingent. So I think that's the reason there. If you look at, you know, over half of people in the Western world now have a phone that has MP3 capacity. At the moment, you can't talk over your phone and listen to music at the same time. So you can't phone someone and have music on. So even though both things are on a mobile phone, you can't do both simultaneously. So I kind of still see them as separate technologies for the time being. But even when you can do it, and there will be a time when you can do both, they still represent different things. You know, one is to allow the outside world to come in, and the other one is to shut it out. I think on a global level, things are becoming more privatized and more personalized. If you add even things like mobile phones and iPods, these technologies privatize space for us. I have this theory which says what we do is we use these technologies to warm up our spaces of communication. If you use an iPod, you're communing with your own history or through the culture industry. If you use a mobile phone, you're communing with an absent other. So what you do is you warm up the space of communication. But around you, that space becomes colder. As that space becomes colder, so you desire more and more to heat up your own space through the use of these technologies. So it's a kind of dialectic of warmth and chill. And so the urban spaces we live in get colder, but we warm up our own private spaces through using these technologies. And this seems to me a general trend across Western cultures. You know, there are some variations. I think Italian cities are a little bit different from northern ones because people are outside more. But there's still certain trends. Like even if you look at Finland, for example, which had a history of not speaking in public, with the use of mobile phones, people, that's eroding, and people are talking more and more loudly on their phones than they did 10 years ago, for example. So you see national differences eroding to some extent through the use of these technologies, and that's quite interesting. So I kind of think that's maybe what's going on.
Can we conclude that iPod and similar devices have changed the daily urban experience? And is this true at a global level?
Yeah, and the iPod is, kind of part one of those technologies. I think it doesn't produce these things. I think what it does is it's symptomatic of social trends in society, which is one of elevating one's private experience, and basically increasingly people live in large urban environments where you don't know people. If you look at mobile phones, even, you know, most people, not teenagers, but most adults only speak to 8 or 9 people on average on their mobile phones. So you think of millions of people and people are speaking with very few. So that's a kind of, you know, so what they want is contact with a familiar person, but they're within a sea of anonymity, so they use it more and more. So, you know, all those technologies all represent, I think, a kind of denial of or response to public space and an elevation of private space. And that, I think, is a general trend in culture, Western culture at least.